It's a risky business, choosing your football team. If you make the wrong choice, you are stuck with that team through thick and thin for the rest of your life. Football is especially good to talk about at the moment for myself, as I recently had the perfect footballing week. I'm a Liverpool fan. However, I've always had a soft spot for Charlton, who my brother supports, and who I used to go and watch when they played up at Selhurst Park when I was younger. My week began on the Sunday, the 26th of May, when I went to Wembley Stadium to see Charlton versus Sunderland in the League One playoff final. This was especially poignant because the best game I've ever seen live was Charlton versus Sunderland in the Championship playoff final in 1998, when I went with my brother to the old Wembley Stadium. The game finished 3-3 at the end of full time, 4-4 at the end of extra time, and then Charlton went on to win 7-6 on penalties. So I was really excited about the same fixture back at the new Wembley Stadium. And what a day it was. Charlton went one behind after 4 minutes when Naby Sarr and Dylan Phillips had a bit of a mix-up at the back and for a calamitous own goal. Rather funny if you weren't so invested in what was going on. Charlton managed to equalise before half-time, and then just as the game seemed to be heading for extra time, Patrick Bauer scrambled the ball across the line in the 94th minute for Charlton to claim another victory and get promoted. What a day. What celebrations. It was a brilliant feeling. Then to top it off, Liverpool played Tottenham in the Champions League final on Saturday, the 1st of June. The game won't be remembered as a classic, but I really don't care. 2-0 winners and champions of Europe for a sixth time. And then there was those amazing scenes in Liverpool on the Sunday when the team and the trophy drove through the Liverpool town centre with hundreds of thousands of people out in the streets singing songs, chanting, cheering, waving flags because a team in red went to Madrid and brought back a cup. It was a brilliant week. I obviously made the right choice of teams to follow that week. It's not always that great though. And most of the time it's the complete opposite. In fact, at Charlton for the past few years, it's all been about relegation, mediocre football, and protesting the owner of the club. Liverpool playing brilliant football at the moment, but it's not always been the case, and it's not always going to be the case in the future. Unfortunately, we won't win the European Cup every season. Choosing your football team is a risky business for your future happiness. The photographer for a national magazine was assigned to get photos of a great forest fire. Smoke at the scene hampered him, and he asked his home office to hire a plane. Arrangements were made, and he was told to go at once to a nearby airport where the plane would be waiting. When he arrived at the airport, a plane was warming up on the runway, so he jumped in with his equipment and yelled, "Let's go, let's go!" The pilot swung the plane into the wind, and they were soon in the air. "Fly over the north side of the fire," yelled the photographer, "and make 3 or 4 low-level passes." "Why?" asked the pilot. "Because I'm going to take pictures. I'm a photographer and photographers take pictures." After a pause, the pilot said, "You mean you're not the instructor?" The fact is, sometimes we are so focused on having to accomplish our own agenda, our own task, that we forget to stop and make sure we're on the right plane. Are we on the right plane? Are we backing the right team? Rahab had to choose which team she was on. She had a very risky choice to make when 2 spies appeared on her doorstep asking her to be hidden. Her choice was difficult and full of risk. To hide the spies and aid the enemy, which would mean turning her back on her people or give them up to the authorities. Rahab enters the story of Israel at an extraordinary moment. These Israelites have never been in Israel. They have followed a pillar of smoke and fire through the desert for 40 years. They have buried an entire generation. They have experienced miracles, violence, and divine victories. With Joshua in command, the whole group has camped east of the Jordan River. And when the time comes, Joshua sends the 2 men into Canaan to spy out the land with instructions to focus on Jericho, Rahab's hometown. We could call Rahab the paragon of otherness, She embodies the opposite of the traditional values held by the Old Testament's original readers. She's female, a Canaanite, Israel's mortal enemy, a prostitute, and a resident of Jericho, which is the first city doomed to fall by the sword when the Israelites enter the land. She's like a death row inmate waiting for the end. The spies, on the other hand, are on a personal mission from the most powerful and revered Israelite alive. God has installed Joshua, made promises to him, and anointed him to replace Moses. They are here to gather information about the land ahead and then get it back to Joshua as he prepares to enter the Holy Land. This interesting account of Rahab raises a number of intriguing questions, such as, how did Rahab become a believer in the God of the Jews? How did the spies know that Rahab would be sympathetic to their cause and not turn them over to the pagan authorities in Jericho? Rahab clearly lied to the king in verses 4 and 5 in order to protect the spies. Does this mean that lying is justifiable and appropriate at times? The most difficult question of all focuses on Rahab's profession. We wonder, why does God choose a woman of ill repute to accomplish his divine and sovereign purpose? Why couldn't she have simply been a normal, average woman in the town? As we survey biblical history, we observe that God has used many unlikely people to accomplish his sovereign plan. God chose Moses, a Jew who had fled Egypt for the desert of Midian because Moses had killed an Egyptian. God selected an ordinary shepherd by the name of David to become Israel's greatest and most powerful king. God allowed his son Jesus to be born to a young woman by the name of Mary in a humble stable manger in the small, unlikely town of Bethlehem. God often chooses the most unlikely people to fulfill his divine and sovereign purposes. So watch out. Be prepared when God calls you to serve in some important capacity. Here's another intriguing question to ponder. Why does this account of Rahab hiding the spies appear in the pages of Scripture? It teaches us a very important lesson about our faith. True faith in God should impact our actions. True faith in God should affect what we do. Our faith should impact the choices we make, the chances we take in life, the way we spend our time and money, the way we treat people, the way we speak, and the way we look at our future. Consider the way that Rahab's faith affected her actions. She welcomed the two spies into her home. She hid them from the king's men, protected them from certain death, told them how to leave so they wouldn't be caught, and she remained in Jericho so that the king's men would not be suspicious. She gave the spies vital information about her people. In verse 8, she tells them that everyone in the city is frightened about the presence of the Israelites across the Jordan River. Notice that she does not say that it was their large numbers or fierce fighting men that had instilled this fear into the hearts of her people. She and her people are frightened because of some events that had transpired some 40 years earlier, specifically the crossing of the Red Sea and the defeat of the kings Sihon and Og. Now, Rahab did not experience any of those events directly. She did not see them with her own eyes. Personally, she knows nothing about God. She has no idea of any of his teachings. All she has to go by is what she has heard about this awesome God, and that was enough for her to be willing to put her life on the line. And so, she gets the two men who have come to spy out the land to promise her that they would spare her life and that of her families in exchange for keeping their presence and their plans a secret. The men agree, but with two conditions. First, she must keep a red cord hanging out of her window on the city wall. And secondly, she must have her father, her mother, her sisters, her brothers, and all their families in her house when the conquest takes place. If any of them were out in the open when the battle starts, the deal would be off and their blood would be upon their own heads. Can you imagine the difficulty Rahab must have had in convincing her family to come and live in her home? For all we know, they could have been fine, respectable citizens of that city and have to stay in a house that was known as a place of passion. My, what would the neighbours be thinking now? For those of you who have tried to share your faith with family and friends, you know firsthand how difficult that can be. But Rahab stands as an example that it can be done. Rahab helps the men escape out of her window and then tells them where to go and hide and avoid detection. They give her the instruction to hang the scarlet cord and then vanish into the night. Notice that they did not give her any deadline. They did not tell her when the battle would begin or even when they would return. All they gave her was their word, and that was enough for her. And because of that, God regards Rahab as one of the great women of faith. In fact, she is mentioned by name in the book of Hebrews as being one of the faithful. After they left her house, the spies hid in the hills for 3 days. Then, after arriving back to camp, they stayed there for 3 days. After those 3 days were over, the Israelites crossed the Jordan River on dry ground, as had their fathers when they had passed through the Red Sea. Once they crossed the Jordan River, they stay at least 3 more days resting and erecting a pillar of 12 stones as a memorial for their children to remind them of what great deeds God had done for them. Then Joshua has all the men take upon themselves the sign of circumcision, and more time is spent on healing. Joshua then reinstitutes the Passover, and the manna from heaven forever ceases. Finally, in chapter 6, the marching begins. The entire Israelite army in full armoured array is commanded to circle the city one time, and they are to do this for 6 consecutive days without a whisper being said. Each day after the Israelites have circled the entire city in complete silence, the troops turn around and go back to camp for the night. Can you imagine Rahab's excitement on that first day when she saw the troops marching around the city? Surely she must have thought that all her efforts in getting her mother, father, brothers, sisters, and their families to stay in her place of ill repute must have made sense to them now. But then you can imagine her disappointment when all they did that day was march around the city in silence and then leave. As she sees this happening from her city wall window, she has only 2 things to rely on: the promise of the spies that they would spare her life and that of her family, and the red cord that hung from her window, which was not only a reminder of their escape, but also of their promise to return. And keep in mind that this red cord was visible to all. It was hanging from the city wall, and it was scarlet in colour. How many times do you think people asked her what it meant? How many times did she have to bite her lip in order not to tell what was about to happen? Can you imagine what her family members must have said to her each day after the whole Israelite army marched around the city and then leave in silence? What must Rahab have been thinking about God during her time of waiting? How does she explain his actions to her family? While the crossing of the Jordan must have been impressive, what about the piling up of a bunch of rocks? What about the unwarlike actions of cutting off foreskins and lying around recovering for 3 days? And what about the Passover, which must have looked like one big barbecue? And then to see them do nothing more than march around and around and around the city without even a whimper from any of them. The men had never given her a deadline or a date of their return. She had taken all the risks. She had kept her part of the bargain by hanging a red cord out of her window for everyone to see and question. She had put the credibility of her family on the line by getting them to live with her. Can you see why God would use her as an example of faith for all those who would come after her? Her faith was greater than those who had witnessed with their own eyes the crossing of the Red Sea. With all they had experienced, they still didn't have the faith in God that a pagan woman had some 40 years later. Here was a woman who had risked everything to be on God's side. Whilst reading around this passage, there were a couple of questions that came to mind. What exactly were the spies looking for, and why Rahab? Did they need to know how thick the walls were? Not really. They don't know it yet, but God was intending to knock them down. They didn't even need to know what kind of weapons they would need to defeat these people. None of these things were factors in the conquering of the city. God wasn't going to need any of that stuff in order to bring down the walls of Jericho. So what was the point of their mission? Personally, I think those spies were sent to Jericho for one purpose and one purpose alone. They were sent there to find Rahab and to assure her of salvation and to mark her home so that she would be protected when the fighting started. It's almost as if God delayed the taking of the land for his people in order to rescue one solitary woman whom he knew had the heart to believe in him. She believed in him in spite of the fact that she had never seen one single miracle of his. And God gave her the conviction needed to persuade others to believe in him also. We too live on the basis of promises by a man who came to our sinful world and then left, assuring us that he'd be back. And like the spies in Rahab's story, this man didn't give us a specific timetable. Why did he come? It wasn't just to look around. It wasn't because he needed to know if he was going to be able to accomplish what he wanted to do. He came for you, just for you. And if you were the only person on this planet who believed in him, he would still have come just for you. And like Rahab, we too have been given the responsibility to try with all our powers to persuade our families and friends to stay in the only safe place, which is within his kingdom. Somehow we must convince our loved ones that his promise is worth risking everything for. He left us with the Holy Spirit as a promise of his return, and the scarlet cord of our lives must be the reality of the blood of Jesus that streamed down the cross. It is our only hope for salvation. Rahab took a colossal risk in hiding the spies from the king's men. Had she been discovered, she surely would have suffered a slow, torturous, agonizing death. The spies took enormous risks in obeying Joshua and spying out the land. They risked their lives for something they believed in strongly. Today, Christians in certain countries risk their lives for the sake of the gospel. We have been blessed to live in a country that protects our freedom to worship. A more common experience for many of us involves taking risks in sharing our faith with family members or colleagues at work or friends at school. When we do this, we risk being ridiculed, rejected, abandoned, and isolated. Are we brave enough to display our faith, to talk about it, to live by it? Rahab was an ordinary woman who showed great faith in a God she did not know. She risked everything for that faith. In the movie called The Dead Poet Society, Robin Williams plays the role of a teacher in an exclusive Eastern prep school in the United States. On the first day of school, he takes a class of boys out into the hallway to look at the pictures of the past, now dead graduates of the school. He motivates them to learn and excel in life with the following words. "We are food for worm, lads. Believe it or not, each and every one of us in this room one day will stop breathing, turn cold and die. Step forward. See these faces from the past. They were just like you are now. They believed they were destined for great things. Their eyes are full of hope. But you see, gentlemen, these boys are now fertilizing daffodils. If you listen real close, you will hear them whisper their legacy to you. Lean in. What do you hear?" They lean in, and then Robin says in an eerie voice, "Carpe diem," which, if your Latin isn't as good as mine, obviously, means seize the day. Seize the day, boys. Make your lives extraordinary. Be brave. Just like Rahab, display your faith for all to see and make your lives extraordinary for God. Take a risk.